Tammy and Alan Duvall glow with health, wealth, and happiness.
If you looked at Alan, he looked rich.
She was very attractive. I mean, she could fix herself up to be a knockout.
But sometimes marital bliss is merely superficial.
Said he was a drunk. His family's nothing but drunks.
Like a lot of addicted people, she'd go right back to it again.
Yes!
Their relationship turns toxic.
Screw you.
You need to learn a bit of respect.
And then, ice cold.
What I heard is it was a constant fight.
Get off me!
This was the healthiest dead person I think I'd ever seen.
Love may be blind and marriage bliss, but divorce is murder. In the small Bible Belt town of Columbus, Indiana, 47-year-old divorcee and nurse's aide Tammy Engelman is a big fish in a small pond.
She was what they called, you know, a good catch, according to the people in the area, a looker, as they said.
Tammy took very good care of herself. She always had makeup on, her hair done, you know, dressed nice.
Tammy may be a mother of three teenagers, but that doesn't mean she has to let herself go.
I'd like a little off on the hip.
Tammy had, from my understanding, been medically enhanced.
And a lot on the lips.
She'd had a breast enhancement, a tummy tuck, and possibly some others.
She had the flat belly. She had the nice, perfect boobs.
She was very attractive. I mean, she could fix herself up to be a knockout.
And Tammy's friend and co-worker, Jennifer Melton, thinks Tammy's not just sexy, she's also sweet.
There was one Christmas that, you know, I was a little short on money and my kids were younger, and she left like $300 there for my kids. Tammy just seemed like just a really great person, a really great friend.
And this nurse's aide is very sociable, too.
So you gentlemen are all doctors, right? I have a doctor joke for you. So the other day I went to go see my doctor and he examined me and told me I had acute appendicitis. And I said, gee, doc, but I only wanted medical help. Hey, girls, come on.
Still, there's something missing in Tammy's life, and that's love.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Until Tammy's friend Jennifer introduces her to 55-year-old former Navy SEAL, Alan Duvall.
This is Alan.
Hello, Alan.
Hello.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. What's your name?
Tammy.
Tammy. That's a lovely name. Can I get you a drink?
Well, I've already had three glasses.
Well, what's your limit?
Should we find out?
I thought they had kind of matching personalities, being, you know, Tammy and Alan both were just very friendly, very outgoing, very, very nice people.
He's probably about 6 foot two, 6'3", 220, tanned all over. He was a sun god. He was healthy. We wouldn't think he was as old as he was. And he took care of himself.
He was the type of guy, when he walked in the room, you turn around and noticed. You noticed him. Alan's biggest strength was his confidence. He carried himself very well. And when you met him, he made you smile. He made you feel good about yourself, and that tells a lot about someone.
Alan, too, is divorced and unattached.
Alan hadn't dated in a while, and I think he was lonely, and he really was looking for some companionship, someone that connected with him, and he found that in Tammy.
Beyond his looks and charm, there's something else that Alan has to offer.
If you looked at Alan, he looked rich. And the way he carried himself, the way the clothes he wore, the jewelry he wore, he looked rich.
Waiter, could I get a bottle of your finest champagne at our table, please?
I believe Tammy thought Alan may have had some sort of bank account, bankroll, however you'd like to put that.
by looking at him, you'd think he had a whole bunch of money, but he didn't. He was just like everybody else.
In fact, Alan is juggling several jobs to maintain his lifestyle.
After he got out of the Navy, he worked on oil fields, I think out in Oklahoma or somewhere out west.
He did landscaping. He had his own little landscaping business.
He worked in a jewelry store. He was a manager of a jewelry store, so he had gold and everything on, wearing a suit and tie and all that stuff.
A third job provides him with a place to sleep at night.
He was still a maintenance guy at the Days Inn, so he got free room.
He had it all. He had looks. He was a hard worker. He was confident. What more do you need?
Before long, it seems all these newly minted lovers need is each other.
You could see the glow in him.
Everybody was really happy for him because they both seemed just really in love and very, very happy. So we were just all like, this is great.
So great that Alan proposes to Tammy just weeks after meeting her.
I guess he felt this is it, you know, because he found a woman that he loved, and he's going to be married to her, and he's going to be with her for the rest of his life.
I couldn't believe that Alan was engaged.
So, William?
Of course.
Not that I didn't think that he could get engaged, but so quickly, I was really surprised by that.
Everyone thought that was really, really fast, but at the same time, you know, Alan and Tammy were both just starry-eyed, you know, smiling, and they were just madly in love.
Psychotherapist Stacy Kaiser and forensic psychologist Brian Russell worry that this lightning-fast attraction might be a bit superficial.
Tammy and Alan have come together with chemistry and attraction. And those are very strong lures to draw two people to one another. That said, it always worries me when I see things like that because it makes me wonder if there's any foundation below that.
I think that 3 weeks of courting is way too short to make the right decision about whether they're right for you in the long run. You have to see that person in a myriad of different kinds of situations. You have to see them go through things that are hard, things that are fun, things that are easy. You have to see how they deal with their family, how they deal with just the public, waiters and waitresses at restaurants. You have to see how they deal with money.
And money, or the lack of it, will start to spoil the party. For years, Tammy has indulged her kids.
Mom, buy me this, okay. Mom, I want that coat, okay.
But now she's putting her needs before theirs.
When they got older and they started realizing that, you know, Mom wasn't going to pay for the orthodontist and Mom wasn't going to pay for the wisdom teeth, she'd go, well, I don't have the money for it.
Okay, Al and I are going away for the weekend, so here's $20.
Mom,
I love you.
You have to be kidding me.
See you later. Okay, sweetheart, I have a surprise for you.
Look at this.
There's also the matter of their honeymoon.
It's Hawaii.
Yeah, it looks expensive.
Alan, you mean it looks beautiful. And this comes with it.
She wanted a honeymoon. And she wanted to go to Hawaii, and he said, we can't afford that.
All right, I guess we're going.
And I knew Alan didn't have nothing. I mean, he's got stuff, but he wasn't rich or anything like that.
That doesn't stop them from doing it anyway on Tammy's line of credit.
With her taking him to Hawaii, making him feel like a king, she bought him all kinds of jewelry and did him all up over there, you know.
And she had no limit on buying jewelry.
They had a really good time. It was a wonderful honeymoon.
But when the honeymoon is over, it's really over.
Is that the check?
She's griping about not having the money and wanting to get money that she had spent on him in Hawaii. She was wanting that money back.
Tammy also encourages Alan to move out of the motel and into a new home with her.
It's perfect.
Yeah, it's a great house.
Oh, sweetheart, I love it.
She was looking to really attain that level that she expected her life to be on. She wanted to live in a bigger home, in a better neighborhood.
I don't know, you know, I'm not sure.
Alan.
The only way she could get a home is if he was part of it. She couldn't have been able to do it by herself, and she knew that.
Well, if you really, really want it.
He knew it was over his means, it was over her means. They both knew it, but he did it for her.
Buying a house is a dream come true for Tammy, and Alan goes along with it. But Tammy's youngest daughter, Allison, the last of the children to leave the nest, is less than pleased.
And I think she was a little resentful that there was a man in the house, you know, taking away some of her mother's attention.
Allison, come celebrate with us. Hey, come on. Your mom loves it.
Who cares what my mom loves?
Allison's not the only resentful one. After such a short courtship, Tammy's still discovering Alan's habits.
Hi, honey.
And one of those is booze.
How are you?
I don't think that Tammy liked the fact that Alan drank at all. This is a man who drank very often. Every time I seen him, he had a beer in his hand.
Did you remember to pick me up more beer?
Do you think maybe you could lay off a little bit this week?
I get it. You forgot, didn't you? It's okay. I'll pick some up myself.
Soon, Alan's drinking will be the least of their worries.
You can't tell me what to do. Get out of my mom's house.
It just wasn't a good situation.
With deep tans, love of bling, and instant sexual chemistry, Tammy and Alan Duval seem like a perfect pair. But shortly after the wedding, Alan's already venting to his neighbor Jennifer on a regular basis.
Yeah, I brought a few friends.
Alan would come over a lot just by himself, just to sit out back on the patio and drink a beer.
How are things?
You know, things could be better. It could be a lot better.
Alan would say different things. She'd go to work and not come home for hours, and he wouldn't know where she was.
Jennifer's house becomes like Alan's second home.
Thanks for asking.
In the meantime, Tammy's got her own escape, the mall.
Tammy was what I guess you would have to say a spendaholic. She liked the idea that people catered her. People that paid attention to her, you know, they could sell her anything.
Oh, thank you, darling. Oh, you know me so well. Keep them coming.
All they had to do was say, oh, you should be a model. Oh, you are so beautiful. You know, you are the type of person that can wear this. And she would buy clothes she never wore. She'd just buy, and it meant nothing to her.
Early on in a relationship, everyone puts their best foot forward. What becomes hard when people move so quickly into a serious relationship is the real self hasn't fully come out yet. And so you don't really know who you're marrying.
Had they given themselves the time to get to know one another, one of two things may have happened. They may have actually built a much more solid foundation that would have made me more optimistic about the long-term chance for their relationship, or they might have found things out about each other that would have caused them to sort of put the brakes on it.
Tammy even maintains her own secret bank account, but it's not enough to cover her mounting debt. And Alan's just about had enough.
Well, her deal was if a bill came in the mail, she would take the bill and she'd throw it inside this cupboard and not open it. And to her, out of sight, was out of mind. And as far as she's concerned, it was taken care of.
He was paying a lot of those payments, yes, but if she was left to paying them, no, they didn't get paid.
Hi, honey. Wait to see the great things I got. Oh.
Yeah, Tammy, we need to talk about that.
You're gonna love it.
She'd get under control for a little bit, and then she'd go right back to it again. You'd get everything paid off under control. She'd turn right around and start over again.
I mean, sweetheart, look at this. It's beautiful.
Adding more stress to this relationship is Tammy's daughter, Allison.
Hi, darling. How are you?
She made some statements about she didn't like him and he was lazy and didn't want to work.
Whoa, what's up with you?
You know what? Me and my mom were better off without you.
All right, two things. You don't talk to me like that, young lady, okay? And you need to learn a bit of respect.
Okay, okay. You know what? This isn't the time. We can talk about this later, okay?
Just a year into the marriage, Alan and Tammy find that every small thing is a reason to start bickering.
She had no right to criticize him for drinking. She drank too. She criticized his drinking, but it was all right for her to drink.
Haven't you had enough, sweetie?
Maybe after the first year or so, if I had to guesstimate, it seems like they were doing a lot more fighting than anything else.
Yes, I will have the $18 chocolate souffle, please.
No, she won't. We'll just take the bill, please.
No, I will have two $18 chocolate souffles, please.
Do you know what? Take this, and please ignore my obviously unbalanced wife.
Screw you.
Ever hopeful, Alan tries to repair the relationship.
Love does some weird things, I guess. He would have done anything for her. And he did do anything for her.
Perhaps he's sticking around for another reason. The promise of financial salvation.
Her dad was a pretty good-sized farmer. Tammy, from what I understand, had Alan believing that she was going to receive a lot of money, and Alan stayed around because he thought that, hey, if something happens on Tammy's side, she's going to inherit a bunch of land, property. I mean, I've heard figures all the way up to $6 million for property in the farmland.
It's hardly a solid foundation for a lasting marriage.
There you go, Mr. Rydell, a spanking new...
Making matters worse, Tammy catches the eye of the son of one of her patients.
My pleasure. Your dad's one of my favorites.
Harry Smith, an insurance salesman.
We just started noticing this, you know, strange car being at Tammy's house, you know, a lot during the day, and then we'd see this, you know, strange man coming in and out of... You know, all times of the day and night.
She said it was a guy from work and he was helping her do things.
But I would tell Alan when he was there. I called him several different times and be like, hey, you know, this guy is here.
Alan told me, he says, I think it's her boyfriend. I really think it's she's seeing him.
But I just don't know how big it is.
May I help you?
Hey.
He's right to be suspicious.
It's okay, I live here. The weather's stripping shot, so I'm just...
Harry is doing a lot more than just selling her insurance.
They were making out like teenage children, both in the hallways and in the parking lot.
As Tammy's affair heats up, a war will be declared, and there will be casualties.
Alan closed their joint bank account.
She called the police and said that he was drunk and out of control.
Tammy and Alan Duval marry months after they meet, but the honeymoon doesn't last for long. Soon, Alan's boozing harder than ever, and Tammy begins an affair with a local insurance agent. When Alan finds out, he hits Tammy where it hurts the most.
Alan closed their joint bank account and opened a bank account solely in his name.
Declined? Alan!
He also lashes out at Tammy's daughter, Allison.
Alan had been drinking. He came home. He was upset with Allison as she was studying for some final tests to complete her high school.
You know, you're not going to graduate if you keep this up.
Mind your own business.
Turn my music back on.
No! Do your homework.
Later that night, Tammy gets a phone call that chills her blood.
Hello?
Allison calls her mother to tell her some startling news.
He what? Okay, just stay there. I'll be right over.
There was an allegation that Alan had struck Allison.
I need to speak with the police.
She called the police on him and said that he was drunk and out of control.
All right, let me ask you one last time. Did you hit her?
No, officer, I did not.
There was no physical indication that she had been struck.
They could tell he wasn't being violent, and there was nobody had any marks on him.
It was just a gentleman who had had too much to drink, so the officers made every effort they could to find a peaceful solution.
All right, Mr. Duval, is there some place you can stay for the night?
What do you mean?
Just until things cool down.
Yeah, okay.
Sweetheart.
That's what happened. Nobody went to jail. They just dropped it. But it was like Allie kind of instigated him because I really feel like Allison wanted him out of there.
The police drop the case, but Tammy doesn't. And when Alan returns home the next day, she's already changed the locks.
Ultimately, it was decided that Alan was going to move out, and Tammy was telling other people that this was going to lead to their separation and divorce.
Okay, I can see you in there, all right? Tammy! Go to hell!
Tammy may have known that it's very unlikely that it was true, yet she used it as a pretext to get Alan out of the house because that's what she wanted anyway.
It is literally a big, giant punishment for Alan. He closed the bank account, he's not behaving the way she wants, and he used to behave the way she wants. And so she is laying down the law by saying, if you're not going to do what I want, you're out of here.
Basically, he said that they were separated and that he was staying down there with a friend of his. And I'm thinking, well, cool, they're not together no more.
Within days of their second wedding anniversary, Alan and Tammy's marriage appears to be over.
Alan had come home, apparently, to mow the grass.
Hey!
This is while they had been separated.
Tammy was bringing this guy home when Alan was living somewhere else.
Well, ma'am, maybe we should... Shut your mouth. I know who you are.
Alan, calm down.
This is my house,
Gary,
and this is my wife.
Get in the house. Alan, calm down.
Don't touch me.
Alan,
all right,
go
get
home.
Get off me.
Go home.
Tammy had to restrain Alan from going into the house and escorted him off the property.
Despite staring Tammy's infidelity in the face, Alan has only one thing on his mind, repairing the relationship.
Things can be different this time.
He would meet her about once a week for dinner. He paid for her dinner and gave her money to help her pay her bills and stuff.
Basically, he wanted to get back with her. He'd do anything to get back with her.
I don't know, Alan. I just don't know.
I listened to him, and if that's what you want to do, do it. I mean, you know, you're a grown man.
Maybe that was his last chance at a relationship. I mean, we're not getting younger.
I think that Alan truly loved Tammy, and when you love someone, it's hard to just cut that off. You can't cut that off.
I'll get this. Do you want that souffle? We will have two souffles to go, please. Thank you.
2 months later, there's a glimmer of hope.
Did you enjoy that, sweetheart?
Oh, it was delicious.
Tammy needs Alan to come and sign some paperwork concerning the joint mortgage, and he comes running.
just need to sign right there.
Anything for you?
You know, I've been thinking, maybe once Allison goes to college, you could move back in.
Alan was excited. He was looking forward to going home.
I would like that very much.
He was looking forward to be back with his wife. He was looking forward to rekindling their marriage and the relationship.
It's a sweltering day in late August 2007 when Alan and Tammy meet for a reunion dinner.
That day was a typical Southern Indiana summertime day. Tammy had prepared what she called a light summer dinner for the two of them.
It's all for you. Sit yourself down. And a special treat.
Suddenly there was beer there. There was Long Island iced tea. So he was in heaven. He was back home, and she was allowing him to drink.
Well, aren't I a lucky man?
Tammy tops off a delicious spread with her dirt pudding, a mix of whipped cream, chocolate pudding, and crushed cookies.
What is it, sweetheart?
I feel hot.
Really? Do you want me to go get you some water or an aspirin?
No, I'm okay. I'm just gonna sit here.
You sure? You just want to find a way to stay over, you little rascal.
She said that she was encouraging Alan to go home, and he said he would later, and he was drinking. He was drinking quite heavily.
Alan, you need to go home.
I'll go home when I need to.
No, Alan, you need to go home.
It's my house, okay? I'll go home when I want.
Frustrated, Tammy retreats to the living room to watch TV.
When she realized it was time for her to go to bed, Alan was still out there.
Hours pass before Tammy wakes up for work.
She said she looked out the window and realized Alan's truck was still there.
This second lease on love is about to turn lethal.
She just knew that something was wrong.
Alan!
I was like in shock.
Alan!
I thought I was dreaming, but it was true.
After money troubles, family tension, infidelity, and addiction, Alan and Tammy Duval are trying to patch up their 2-year marriage. But a reunion dinner ends with Alan in a drunken stupor.
Alan, you're still here? Alan, get up. You have to go to work. Alan.
And he's still there, passed out the next morning.
And Alan was still there, asleep. She woke him up, told him that he needed to go home, get rest, get ready for work.
Geez, Alan, get it together.
Alan apparently just said, I'll take care of it.
Hours later, Tammy returns to give Alan the boot. Only his condition is much worse than before.
Alan!
Alan was unresponsive.
Baby, wake up. Alan!
She had called 911 and summoned an ambulance.
Hello, I need some help.
They asked her if she was familiar with CPR. She said she was.
Yeah, I'm a nurse. I'll try, hold on.
She put the phone down.
Okay, baby.
And they could kind of hear grunts or groans.
He's too heavy, I can't lift him.
And they said, okay, officers are on the way and the ambulance will be there in just a few moments.
But by the time paramedics arrive, it's far too late for CPR.
I'm sorry, ma'am, but your husband's dead.
I went out in my backyard and kind of peeked over the fence, and they had him covered him up, but he was sitting in a lawn chair, dead.
The cause of Alan's death seems clear, a deadly cocktail of heat and booze.
the death had been investigated by our department and was ruled that it was due to heat exhaustion, alcohol consumption. I think it was higher than 0.25% blood alcohol, which in state of Indiana now, that's three times the level that you would be arrested for driving under the influence.
News of Alan's death spreads fast.
My husband and I, we were sleeping and the phone rang. Who in the world could be calling this time of morning?
Hi, Zila, it's Tammy. Listen, I don't know how to tell you this, but Alan's dead.
I was like in shock. I thought, what did she do? What is this? I thought I was dreaming. But it was true. And she said,
and listen, if you want to see him, you need to come up before the cremation.
And I'm thinking, cremated? We didn't even know he was dead.
Family and friends are puzzled by this hasty decision.
Alan wanted a military service at his funeral. He was proud of the time he served, and that's what he asked for. That's what he wanted.
I told her I was pretty sure that Alan did not want to be cremated. And she said, well, I'm his wife.
For Alan's loved ones, it's the ultimate slap in the face.
They bring him out. He was on a gurney, like in a hospital, with one of them things behind his neck, holding his head up straight.
Alan had no clothes on. He had no jewelry, nothing. He was stripped down to his bare skin. And Tammy told them that his clothes was an expense she couldn't afford. And that just tore my parents up.
Some people might look at this and say, well, maybe there was a cost factor involved. Maybe she didn't really love him that much, didn't really want to reconcile, and now that he's gone, she wants to save money. However, Alan was a veteran. He could have had his funeral paid for completely, whichever way he had it, cremation or traditional burial, by the government. And so cost would not have been a factor here.
Tammy is all about Tammy. She doesn't really have a lot of regard for what other people feel. She sort of does what it is that she feels like doing and doesn't worry about anyone else being upset.
The planned cremation raises eyebrows, and so does the coroner's report. Alan is a hardened drinker with a high tolerance for alcohol.
This is a man that is used to having a few beers every day.
Yes! Oh, come on, come on!
That could hold liquor really well.
I'm going to show you how we used to do it in the Army.
It does not make any sense how Alan could die of alcohol poisoning or drink himself to death when this is a professional drinker.
Observe.
How's that?
Oh, chest to the ground, soldier! Beverage break.
Alan's family and friends press for more details on the cause of his death.
I asked to talk to the police detectives. I said, what did the autopsy show? He says, we don't do autopsies on alcohol poisoning. I told him he didn't have enough alcohol in that town to kill that man. He said, there's no way possible.
Mark Crookton is the on-call detective that weekend.
They expressed their concern that Alan was a big drinker, but would not die from just drinking.
Suspecting foul play, Crookton has the cremation postponed.
I went to the mortuary and asked them if I could examine the body, and they were cooperative. Been a police officer for a long time. I'd seen a lot of people die, but this was the healthiest dead person I think I'd ever seen. And with that information, I requested an autopsy be conducted.
Meanwhile, Tammy bows to public pressure and holds a memorial for Alan.
There was an urn up there, but it was empty. His body was actually still downstairs being looked at.
3 weeks after the memorial, the autopsy results are in. Alan's friends and relatives were right to be suspicious. It wasn't the alcohol that killed Alan.
He had almost 80 times the therapeutic level of a muscle relaxant in his system. And he had close to 100 times the lethal amount of an opiate.
More specifically, morphine.
she made the statement Alan had actually killed himself.
After an autopsy reveals a lethal dose of morphine in Alan Duvall's system, his wife Tammy comes clean and admits that Alan's death was no accident.
And at that point, she made the statement Alan had actually killed himself.
Alan, are you never gonna change?
Tammy says Alan was depressed about their relationship on the evening he died.
Tammy!
So depressed, he was driven to suicide.
If I can't have you, I don't want to go on.
He had lifted this bottle and then poured it down his throat.
Jesus! Is everything a joke to you?
Tammy says she didn't believe Alan was serious, and she turned in for the night. When she realizes that Alan has killed himself, she cleans up the traces of his suicide before calling the cops in the hope of preserving his dignity.
There was some vomitous or red frothy blood that she said that she had cleaned up off his face so that we would not see that he had suffered an overdose and that she had disposed of the bottle.
Alan, what have you done?
Guys tend to use firearms, especially a guy like Alan who was familiar with firearms from his military service days. Morphine is not very accessible. I guess if he were going to poison himself as a guy, he probably would have done it with lots of other substances before morphine. So I'm just not buying this at all.
Something about Tammy's story doesn't sit right with Detective Crookton. Tammy claimed she exchanged words with Alan hours after he ingested the morphine. But that's impossible, because Alan would have died the moment he took it.
It was a very high concentrate morphine solution, and the dosage was a quarter of a drop. It probably turned his heart off like a switch.
Family and friends have their own doubts.
I called, I know my stepdad called, my mom called, with basically just the same, you know, you need to really look into this because there's no way he done this to himself. This was not a suicide.
And there's another voice that adds to the rising chorus of suspicion. Tammy's eldest daughter, Caitlin.
We received another phone call, and this was from Tammy's daughter and her husband. And they indicated to the front desk officer that they were concerned that Tammy had killed her husband.
I'm sure it was very hard for her, but at the same time, I mean, she just knew that she had to say something.
Caitlin tells police that her mother had a particular interest in TV crime shows.
She was big into crime scene movies and said that she had just figured out the easiest way to kill somebody was wait till the weekend and get an on-call detective who had other things to do, that you would poison somebody, and then you would ask for immediate cremation before they had a autopsy.
The police think she did it, the neighbors think she did it, even her daughter thinks she did it. But there's no hard evidence to support a murder charge.
I was at a dead end at that point. Couldn't go any further with it because I didn't know where the morphine came from.
As the investigation stalls, Tammy moves on and decides to sell the house.
It wasn't very long after Alan died that she got rid of it because now he's dead, she can sell it.
But the sale is not enough to keep her afloat.
I can't wait to get it home and try it.
Tammy's bank balance is dwindling.
Thank you.
And with the homicide investigation still active, Alan's life insurance will not pay out.
Oh, that can't be. Try it again.
So she calls Detective Crookton and asks about the progress of the investigation.
Detective Crookton, please.
One of my best assets throughout this investigation was Tammy herself.
Detective Crookton.
Hi there, it's Tammy Duvall.
Hi, Mrs. Duvall. How are you?
So she explained to me that she had an insurance policy and the insurance company wasn't paying.
Detective Crookton takes the opportunity to dig a little deeper into Tammy's past.
We needed a bit more information.
Could you tell us where you've been working lately?
Yes, I just started a new job at a new residence.
At this point, through her licensing, had found quite a few different places that she had worked at. She gave me another place that I was not aware of.
You know what? Don't worry about it. I'll leave it.
So with this information, I went to there, and I asked them, tell me what kind of employee that Tammy was. Said, well, the last time that Tammy worked for us, we had some medication missing. An actual registered nurse was taking care of a hospice patient, and this patient was to receive a quarter of one drop of medication orally. The nurse had told me that he and Tammy were sharing care of this patient, and he was called away from an emergency in another room.
And that's when the bottle of morphine disappears.
Nobody had seen it. Nobody had any idea what happened to it. And the director of nursing sat down and said, well, to kind of protect you, we're just going to indicate that the medication was spilled.
As for the muscle relaxants that were also found in Alan's system, they were even easier to come by.
Zilla had kind of relayed to me some of the medical issues that she has. Zilla had so many of these muscle relaxants, they were just stacked around the home like candy.
I think she ended up with about 200 of them or so. I don't really know the amount.
3 years after Alan's death, Tammy is dating a new boyfriend in Indiana. She has no idea that one casual phone call has given the detectives the lead they need to wrap up the case.
Detective Crookton, what are you doing here?
Tammy DeVal, you're under arrest for the murder of your husband.
What? No!
Tammy's not only charged with murder, she's charged with insurance fraud and obstruction of justice.
Please!
I wanted to be there, a fly on the wall, anything. I wanted to see her face.
I was happy. I was happy that she finally got arrested. She'd been walking free for 3 years. And I thought they just forgot about it.
Tammy's motive is one of the oldest in the book. Money. That was no mortgage document that Tammy had Alan sign 1 month before his death.
Allison said, you're not going to believe this. Mom bought Alan an insurance policy for $100,000. And I stopped and I looked at her and I said, she did what?
At Tammy's trial, the whole lurid story is revealed.
She mixed the muscle relaxers in the Long Island iced tea, which is lemonade and all that, and then did the morphine in the dirt pudding, which is Oreo cookies and all this. It made it to where you couldn't taste it.
He probably drank enough of the muscle relaxant that it may have put him to sleep.
I'm a lucky man.
And it may have left him incapable of moving.
But the dose of morphine isn't quite high enough to finish the job.
He could still breathe, his heart would still beat, he could still blink his eyes, and we believe that Tammy took this bottle of morphine sulfate, put it to his lips, and poured it down his throat. He was dead before she took it away from his mouth.
There's another skeleton in Tammy's closet. Although prosecutors don't have enough evidence to prove it, a witness comes forward to testify that Tammy may have tried to kill before.
She had had another boyfriend that she tried this to, only he took one bite and tasted something and threw it out and kicked her out the door. And then once all this came out, he was like, wow, that's what she was doing, you know, that would have been me.
On April 20th, 2011, after a 16-day trial, a jury serves Tammy her just dessert. She's found guilty of insurance fraud, obstruction of justice, and murder.
It's not like CSI. It doesn't get done in 30 minutes. It's a process. We have to dot all our I's and cross all our T's. We only get one shot.
And I just thank God for all the phone calls that went into the police station, or she would have gotten away with it.
I've seen the system break down so many times, and people that should get convicted just walk away with it, but the system worked.
Tammy believed that she had created the perfect crime, and she actually thought she got away with it, and she did for a really, really long time. What she didn't take into account was all of the holes that she had left behind, all of the patterns.
Most sociopathic people overestimate just how brilliant they are and how many I's they've dotted and T's they've crossed and just how perfect their crimes are. Thank God, because if they really were as smart as they think they are, we'd have a lot more unsolved cases.
Tammy Duval is sentenced to 60 and a half years in prison.
I think we felt his life was worth a little more than that, but in 30 years, it'll be a new life when she gets out. It's going to be way different than what she's used to.
But life will never be the same for all those who loved Alan.
I just miss the fact that he's not here and he's not able to go on with his life and be alive. He had so much life.
He was just a sweetheart, and I miss that.
He was a part of me. It just, I loved him so much.